This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to your favorite Saturday morning radio program, heard exclusively here on WEEB. This is Taking Aim, and I'm Steve Woodward. We are ready to jump into it this morning, everybody, and we really do thank you for joining us each and every week right here at 11 a.m. We will begin by acknowledging our beloved sponsors, The Marketplace Restaurant and Catering, since 1980, your go-to for delicious breakfast and lunch and menu items, including the fabulous breakfast burritos. Got to try those. And all of your catering requirements, whether you're organizing a small intimate gathering or the wedding of the century or something in between. The Marketplace Restaurant and Catering, since 1980. Also, we acknowledge We the People Declare, a watchdog organization keeping a close eye, a continuous scrutiny on the village of Pinehurst and surrounding Moore County. WeThePeopleDeclare.com is the website where you can go to learn all about its mission and its participants and its achievements and its goals and objectives going forward. We the People Declare. Coming up later in the program today, we have a really great guest, an inspirational guest, Bob Huber, the director of worship at Sand Hills Alliance Church off of Highway 5 in Pinehurst. Bob is going to be here to tell us all about his inspirational Tuesday monthly service, which is geared toward worship and outreach to those with disabilities, mental, physical, all of the above. And Bob has really grown this outreach over recent years into something that is changing lives in a very real way through the Word of God and the very simple act of gathering to worship and to sing and read and reflect on Christian faith. Bob Huber will be joining us later in the program. Well, we begin as we do each and every week. We're a little predictable, but we like to keep it that way. Public enemy number one is first on the radar screen this morning. And I bet you that you are going to guess very easily who we selected this week, because if any of you watched, and I'm sure many of you did watch, or maybe the word is endure, the State of the Union address earlier in the week delivered by the 47th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, I'm sure many of you observed the childlike behavior, the petulant immaturity of the Democrats who came into the chamber for the State of the Union. Many of them, of course, boycotted because they are permanently angry and miserable people who do not wish to partake in important rituals in the political life of this country, such as the State of the Union, which, by the way, you know, years ago, presidents would deliver a written State of the Union. That was all they were really required to do. But with the advent of television, it became an irresistible, made-for-TV evening event in prime time. Well, the Democrats who did show up were, you know, they were sitting on their hands. They were incapable of applauding American heroes. They were barely able to summon a bit of enthusiasm for the arrival of the triumphant Olympic men's hockey team, the U.S. Hockey team, gold medals around their necks, fresh back from Milano, Italy. They were able to possibly do a tennis clap for those guys. And then it just devolved from there, really, one embarrassing moment after another. Some of them, like Ilhan Omar, were wearing vulgar buttons with slogans on them on their lapels. And by contrast, the most normal Democrat in the building was Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman, who wore a proper suit and tie and sat respectfully through the proceedings and drove his fellow Democrats absolutely crazy. But this whole thing got under the skin of one of our field generals in the MAGA movement. And because it wasn't just about Democrats misbehaving and being rude and being dismissive of Donald Trump and seething with hatred for him, because we already knew those things existed before the State of the Union speech. But Field General of MAGA Steve Bannon really encapsulated the whole disgusting state of affairs. Let's play clip one.
He called them out. He says the reason they don't back the Save America Act is obvious. They don't want voter ID. They don't want the purge of the voter rolls. They don't want to stop the abuses of mail-in ballots because, as we say on this show over and over again, if you can't cheat, you can't win. And then John Solomon's got all this new information that's coming out nonstop about the J6 committee working with the White House and DOJ. This is why you and I went to prison. And I'm prouder of it now than ever because you saw the demons. These are demons and criminals. The J6 committee are a group of criminals. The senior members of the Justice Department were a series of criminals. The White House had a series of criminals there. And in that audience last night were criminals. They're criminals, the Samayan, all of it. There's nothing to debate here. It's not open for debate anymore. It's only one side's going to win and one side's going to lose. And the way you win is you got to put your muscle into the field and get everybody. We have to have now truly an army of the awakened. Because I don't believe, Peter, you made a very profound statement at the top. Trump's supposed to be a disruptor. He's supposed to be the destroyer. He's the one that's rejuvenating and saving these institutions. Without Trump, it craters because they're anarchists. They're Marxist. You said that you couldn't believe how you used the word debased. And normally you and I talk about debase when we talk about a currency. They're debasing American life. They're debasing this American republic. They're debasing everything that every generation in this country from, 14, 15, 16 generations have passed down to the other generation. They want to destroy it all, and it's manifested in the 20 to 25 million illegal aliens they brought in this country, and they couldn't stand when Trump said, not my administration, not me, Donald Trump, not DHS, the American government's number one priority is to protect American citizens and not illegal aliens. Can you please stand and show your support? And they sat there, called out, walked into a trap and called out by the commander in chief, the president of the United States, the chief magistrate and the chief law enforcement officer of this republic.
Wow. And Steve Bannon, that couldn't have been stated any better in just about 2 minutes. But Steve Bannon referenced Peter there. He had him on as a guest. That's Peter Navarro, who is a senior counselor to the president. And just worth mentioning, both Bannon and Navarro spent 4 months in prison during the Biden administration because they refused to testify before the sham January 6th committee. And they each were sent off to a federal prison for 4 months, separate prisons at separate times. But now they're back, and they were undeterred by that little detour. If you watch the State of the Union, and, you know, they said the speech was almost 2 hours long, but really that's misleading because there were many moments given over to introducing guests in the chamber, to describing their backstories, such as the 100-year-old military veteran who received the Congressional Medal of Freedom, and others, the helicopter pilot who stood in the chamber still recovering from terrible wounds during a military engagement. There, of course, was the mother of the slain Ukrainian immigrant, Irina. Her mother was in the chamber, and of course the Democrats were unwilling to applaud her presence because they are really, really despicable human beings, which segues so very nicely into a equally despicable one who delivers us this week's public embarrassment number one. We do that as well each and every week right here on Taking Aim. And that dubious distinction has to go to the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, or as he is known affectionately in some circles, Gavin Newsom. He thinks he's running for president in 2028. I suspect it's almost inevitable that he will, unless he's swallowed into a California sinkhole during an epic earthquake. But that probably won't happen, so we're stuck with him. He demonstrated, as he's going out on the road now to sort of test the waters of being a presidential candidate, we're seeing that the governor has a different message and a different biography about himself, autobiography, I guess you would call it, when depending on the audience. Here's a quick clip that demonstrates that. It's clip two.
You've written a hell of a book, and I don't say that lightly. I went through it in a quick hour and a half, almost 2 hours. And trust me, I don't read very fast, but it reads at an unbelievable pace. It's so well written. And of course, it's so familiar because I felt a little bit adjacent to so much of the subject matter. But it's 18 chapters. It's an impressive piece of work, 263 or so pages.
I cannot. You've never seen me read a speech because I cannot read a speech.
Huh, really? But he can read 18 chapters of a book that's 260 pages. So the context there is that the first part of that clip where he's gushing about the book that he read with his own eyeballs is in front of an author who is a white author and a white audience somewhere in California. The latter part of that clip, he's in South Carolina more recently on a podcast with a black host. And there he was trying to somehow very awkwardly connect to this audience by saying that I guess the message was, I know you can't read, so to pander to you, I'm going to reinforce that I can't read either. So that's why you should vote for me if I ever decide to run for president. See how that works? It's, you know, if you're the recipient of that kind of grotesque pandering and the presumption that the color of someone's skin tells you anything about their reading proficiency, I mean, that is outrageous. If a Republican tried to do that, they would be properly tarred and feathered. I mean, Hillary Clinton did it back in the day when she was running for president, talking about how she always had a bottle of hot sauce in her purse and going to Southern Baptist churches and trying to adjust her dialect so that she sounded properly authentic. So they've all tried it, and we see right through it. That's the part they don't get. It's really disgusting. Now we're going to shift our attention to one of the more comical events of the week. First of all, we were all laughing heartily when New York City was pummeled by about 20 inches of snow, blizzard-like snow, just at the outset of the regime of Mayor Zoran the Moron Mamdani, a self-described Democrat socialist. Now, Zoran's had two big winter weather events occur since he was inaugurated as mayor, and I just have to think that this is some kind of divine intervention to make his life as miserable as possible. Of course, it's also at the expense of all the other New Yorkers, too, for which maybe that's not such a bad thing either. But so along comes this latest snowstorm, 20 inches recorded in Central Park, New York City. And Zoran wants to try to advance the cause of collectivism, which is a socialist Marxist buzzword. And what was the plan? Well, here it is. A lot of snow is coming, folks, and most of you don't have jobs because you're all on the dole, on the government dole. So here's my plan as mayor. I'm going to invite you to come out with multiple forms of ID, mind you. You don't need them to vote, but you need them to engage in community civic duties. I want you to come out, and we're going to pay you, I think they came up with $29 an hour, and I don't know why. We're going to pay you $29 an hour. We're going to hand you a snow shovel, and you're going to go out in your community, and you're going to shovel snow. Now, we used to just do that instinctively in our communities as neighbors. If there was a senior citizen nearby, you'd go shovel their sidewalk for them. You wouldn't ask for permission. You wouldn't expect to get credit. You wouldn't want a pat on the head or a $29 an hour for sure. But now it has to be an orchestrated government project because Lord knows they weren't going to get the snow cleared without bringing on the glassy-eyed minions of Mom Dami. So, but of course, quickly, these people who are so good at gaming the system even figured out that Mom Dami was vulnerable to being gamed, and they picked up on it real quick. And let's just say not a lot of snow got shoveled. Play clip three.
And listen to this. So Mom Dami here in New York, you know, he wants us to shovel, and he'll pay you up to $29 an hour, okay? Listen to this. So they want you to have two forms of ID, including your social security. Funny, huh? And guess what? You go there, they give you a shovel, okay? And there's no supervision, and you're getting paid an hour. You know, they're taking the money out of the emergency. So this is out of the emergency funds. Okay. And he's paying all those people who live here in New York who want to go shovel without supervision. So I took the shovel, put it at home, and getting paid $28, $29 an hour. You know? Why not use the idiot?
Why not use the idiot? I love that. That is so great. And so let's just say the perfect winter scenario for me is a blizzard in New York City when the mayor is named Zoran Mamdani, a Democrat, socialist, Marxist, atheist. I could go on. That's the perfect winter wonderland scenario for yours truly. Meanwhile, with dry roads here in Moore County, that's what we like some dry pavement here because, boy, you know how hysterical it gets when there's you know, a quarter of an inch of the white powder out there. It's like, Midland Road becomes like the Olympic bobsled track in no time flat. So that's our little tale of hilarity from New York City, the city that never sweeps, as Chris Plant likes to say. News came out of Mecklenburg County, and usually if it's out of Mecklenburg County, that's Charlotte vicinity. It usually involves Democrats and lefties being outraged about something. And, you know, recently it was about the Mecklenburg County sheriff who didn't know which branch of government he toils in, couldn't answer the question. The latest is that ICE agents have arrested four illegal immigrants at the Mecklenburg County Courthouse. This was just this past week. And what happened? Well, the ICE agents had every reason to come in and detain these four illegal immigrants and arrest them, which they did. But what they weren't counting on, but maybe they should have been, was that several attorneys in the courthouse attempted to interfere with the arrests. I'm not making this up. And by the way, I know what the left says. I know what the Democrats say. They're like, well, why would you go in to a courthouse and rip these illegal immigrants out of the building and take them away and arrest them? I mean, what have they done wrong? Well, I'll tell you what they've done wrong. And they have names, and I'm not gonna bother you with their three or four names, two middle names and a last name and a first name. But let's just go down the list of what these guys have been charged with and why they were being arrested by federal agents. And if you live in Mecklenburg County, you ought to be breathing a sigh of relief that these guys are being taken out of there. The first guy's name is Elder, kind of like a church elder, but probably not by a long shot. Okay, his rap sheet is assault on a female, injury to personal property. The second illegal, his name is Gerson. Domestic violence charge, assault on a female. Do you see the pattern? The third illegal immigrant, now out of our hair, his name is Nestor. Nestor the molester. Child abuse is, in fact, one of his charged offenses, so that's a proper nickname. DWI, driving while intoxicated. Not driving while informed. It's driving while intoxicated. and resisting arrest, because boy, don't they do that well. And our last culprit is Alfredo, Fettuccine Alfredo, and he also is charged with DUI. Now, DUI is a serious offense. It's very serious when any of us are charged with it. And what's been happening with the illegal immigrants is they go out and get liquored up, and they drive a vehicle out, and they kill people. So they're not just drunk, they're murderous to boot. So this is the story. And you know what? Any lawyer in a courthouse that tries to impede a federal agent from Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or any other federal agent for that matter, who tries to impede the removal of these people, that lawyer ought to be disbarred, or at least suspended, or at least arrested, or all of the above. Or maybe they should be forced to go watch a Charlotte Hornets basketball game. That might be a proper punishment. I'm not sure about that. But anyway, that's what was going down in Mecklenburg County in the courthouse. So luckily, the ICE agents did their job, and no animals were harmed in the filming of that sequence. So thank you very much. Have you heard of the Atlantic magazine? So the Atlantic has been around since 1857. And, you know, it's got a kind of a benign sounding name, the Atlantic. You know, if it had been founded in California, they probably would have called it the Pacific. You know, if it was founded in on the Gulf Coast of Mississippi, they would have called it the Gulf. You see where I'm going with this. But it's called the Atlantic and has been since 1857, around the time that Joe Biden first went to Washington. And it has a perpetual condition, which we're very well familiar with, Trump derangement syndrome. The entire Atlantic news organization today is wholly and solely committed to pointing out all of the reasons why Trump is Hitler, Trump is a Nazi, Trump is a racist, Trump is a existential threat to our democracy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And these are, you know, I have to say, as a literary product, The Atlantic is a very fine publication in terms of the writing, the editing, the photography, the graphic art, and some of the writing about arts and culture and travel and book reviews is very good. I mean, I can't complain about that. But it's kind of like my approach to this is the same way I feel about the Pilot newspaper. I read it so you don't have to. So I actually subscribe to The Atlantic magazine so you don't have to. The March edition is a cover story all about AI and the future of work, which, you know, is actually kind of a legitimate topic to consider. So they took a month off from a Trump doom and gloom cover story to do something that's actually maybe worth our time to read about. But in the same issue, and in a forthcoming issue, you will be reading all about Trump and what an evil lurking creature he is, who endangers us all. They've taken it actually beyond Trump in the current iteration by a longtime lefty writer and editor named Tom Nichols. They now say in their latest, this is actually coming out in the April edition, but it is available online right now. They're saying that the entire Republican Party has a little problem that involves the swastika. Let's play clip 4.
Over the past few months, during his agency's chaotic crackdowns in Chicago and Minneapolis, the U.S. Border Patrol Chief Greg Bovino has worn an unusual uniform, a wide lapel greatcoat with brass buttons and stars along one sleeve. It looks like it was taken right off the shoulders of a Wehrmacht officer in the 1930s. Bovino's choice of garment is more than tough guy cosplay. German media noted the aesthetic immediately. The coat symbolizes a trend. The Republicans, it seems, have a bit of a Nazi problem. By this, I mean that some Republicans are deploying Nazi imagery and rhetoric and espouse ideas associated with the Nazi Party during its rise to power in the early 1930s. Vice President J.D. Vance shrugged off that controversy instead of condemning the growing influence of anti-Semites in his party. Even federal agencies are modeling Nazi phrasing. The Department of Homeland Security used an anthem beloved by neo-Nazi groups, "By God We'll Have Our Home Again," in a recruitment ad. The Labor Department hung a giant banner of Donald Trump's face from its headquarters, as if Washington were Berlin in 1936, and posted expressions on social media such as "America is for Americans," an obvious riff on the Nazi slogan "Germany for the Germans," and "Americanism will prevail" in a font reminiscent of Third Reich documents. Trump, of course, openly pines to be a dictator. In his first term, he reportedly told his chief of staff, General John Kelly, that he wished he had generals who were as loyal as Hitler's military leaders. The president was perhaps unaware of how often the Führer's officers tried to kill him.
Wow. Okay, so see how they slipped in that little not-so-veiled reference to "tried to kill him," as if to, you know, just plant that little seed that Trump may not be out of the woods yet. That really got me because, you know, you could sort of, they think they're going to get away with it because they're doing it, they're making the reference in the context of Hitler's generals. But since they just spent 90 seconds telling us how similar Hitler and Trump are, then what's the difference, right? I don't think there is one. Additionally, and again, I'm not encouraging anyone to subscribe to The Atlantic. I'll do it so you don't have to. But the March issue also contains a dire warning about the Make America Healthy Again movement, MAHA. Now, I think most of us with a brain generally understand the MAHA movement led by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to be a long overdue necessary reversal of our understanding of diet and our overall health. I think it's quite plain to anyone who's paying attention. But in The Atlantic, they say is that MAHA is in some ways just another step in the long retreat of the civic trust and communitarian spirit that have enabled America's disease-fighting efforts. So what are they saying there? That MAHA is going to bring about a return to greater disease epidemics in our country. How do you make that leap? I have no idea. It continues. If this retreat continues, the public health era, the century-long period of unprecedented epidemic safety that has been the foundation for so many other breakthroughs, that will come to an end, warns The Atlantic, and that end will have dire consequences for this republic and its future. So MAHA bad. Now, what he's getting at here, of course, this author, Van Newkirk II. That means he has a father who might be equally loony. What this is getting at is that the MAHA movement is also very much in favor of reforming our addiction to vaccinations, especially for children. And they've already rolled back the guidance on the number of vaccinations that are recommended for kids. What this author is insinuating, not so subtly, is that MAHA is going to lead us back to an age of disease, back, you know, when they used to bleed people who had various diagnoses and leeches were used, and this is what he's getting at. Then in another article in The Atlantic, they take an attack on an author named Rod Dreher. And the article is entitled "Rod Dreher's Demons." He derides the Enlightenment, secularism, and the modern world. Conservatives are joining him on a march back to the Middle Ages. Oh, gosh. They go on to say that that Dreher's writings have fueled some of the more apocalyptic currents on the Trumpist right, such as Peter Thiel's musings on the Antichrist and the ravings of Dan Bongino, the now former deputy director of the FBI, who has said that demons are real. Wow. Okay, so again, guilt by association in The Atlantic. If you are following the writings of a perfectly legitimate modern-day intellectual, what you're really doing is you're embracing the radical MAGA right, and you're obsessed with demons, something like that. I don't know. Bongino, by the way, is back doing radio, and you know, thankfully we thank him. I was going to say for serving our country for a year in the Trump administration as a deputy at the FBI directorship, but I think he's actually much more effective on the outside, doing the radio, doing the podcast, appearing as a guest on various programs and whatnot. I don't know. Well, we would we can't let this this program go by without some discussion of the Mar-a-Lago mystery man from none other than Moore County, North Carolina. The Mar-a-Lago mystery man, I call him that because this young man, 21 years of age, so an adult technically, as we know now, jumped into his vehicle about a week ago and drove overnight down to Palm Beach, Florida, and rolled up at the Mar-a-Lago resort and estate where, of course, President Trump spends a lot of weekends, especially in the winter. This particular weekend, this was last weekend, a week ago, Trump was not at Mar-a-Lago because he remained in Washington, D.C. and in the White House to welcome the nation's governors for their annual meeting and gala dinner in the White House. So he was wearing a tux up in D.C. and this young man, and I'm not going to name the kid from Moore County. His name is all over the media and the newspapers. And the pilot headline said that he was killed at Mar-a-Lago, which technically is true, but that's kind of like not the whole story. He was killed at Mar-a-Lago because he raised a shotgun and pointed it at Secret Service agents after they told him to put the weapon down. So it's not like he was just randomly killed at Mar-a-Lago. If you read that headline, you'd think, oh, who did it? Trump? Melania? Barron? Don Jr.? Who shot the kid? He was killed at Mar-a-Lago. How terrible. Not the case. We don't know a lot about him. He graduated from Union Pines High School. This is all so surreal, isn't it? That this kid, who nobody knew anything about except his immediate family, got in a vehicle and drove hours and hours through the night into southeast Florida to Palm Beach, one of the most tranquil places in the country. And the only reason he made it to the one of the security gates was because it was 1:30 in the morning and Trump wasn't in town. That road would be shut down entirely to traffic if Trump had been asleep at Mar-a-Lago. In this case, it was not shut down. But there are still Secret Service agents and other Palm Beach County law enforcement agents permanently assigned to Mar-a-Lago because it has a litany of club members and people who are there for social events. And I believe there are overnight accommodations for certain VIPs and dignitaries and others. So anyway, it's a sad story. Fortunately, the kid with the gas can and the shotgun was stopped before he did any serious harm or killed any innocent people or set something on fire. I don't know if we'll ever understand the motive. I believe that, you know, this is being very thoroughly investigated because it involved the sitting president's winter residence, and it should be. And I'm sure we'll learn more as we go forward. But it had to be mentioned because, you know, here we have a connection between Moore County and yet another potential attempt to inflict violence on a sitting president and or members of his family and or members of his inner circle of guests and friends. Who knows what what was going through the mind of this young man. And we send out our heartfelt prayers to his family, his mother and father who are left behind, and a brother. And they endured just about 3 years ago the death of their daughter in a DUI related crash. She was killed by a drunk driver. So now they've lost two children in about 3 years' time. Very sad story. Right here in Moore County, North Carolina. I don't know if you saw this one, and I got to bring it up. This'll circle us back to the State of the Union address that we were referencing earlier in the context of the misbehaving Democrats. This story came out a couple of days after the State of the Union. It involves Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton, a Democrat, of course. He attended the State of the Union, but apparently because he brought with him one or more guests, he was seated in the upper balcony seating area, not in the on the floor. I guess if you want to bring a guest, you know, I don't know all the details about this particular guest, but or the logistics behind it. But let's just say that his guest is being described by the media as a Milford, Massachusetts teenager. Okay, but friends, the Milford, Massachusetts teenager, not unlike the Maryland man of a few months ago, is the son of an illegal immigrant living in Massachusetts. So by extension, the son, this kid, is living illegally in the United States without citizenship, without documentation. And just to be a jerk, and just to draw attention to himself, this congressman from Massachusetts, Moulton, escorts this young man to the State of the Union. Well, he's a teenager. Guess what he starts doing? Texting. Guess where I am? You won't believe it. Where? Who I'm with? What I'm doing? Well, the word gets out, and they sent some law enforcement into the upper balcony, and they escorted the kid and the congressman the heck out of there, and they took him to the congressman's office in an adjacent building so he could hang out for the remainder of the president's speech. But now you cannot find, and I looked, believe me, I tried to do the research, you cannot find any reference to where this kid comes from, what country he was born in. They're just calling him a Milford teenager. And now, of course, the story is going to be, oh, this is terrible that they ripped this kid out of the building. He was wearing a nice suit and tie. Well, he wasn't doing anything wrong. But, of course, his parents broke the law when they came here illegally all those many years ago. And now here we are, back in the grip of reality, ladies and gentlemen. Well, it has been quite an eventful week. Just a programming note. Next week, your faithful host is going to be taking a little break. We will be delivering to you one of our previous interview shows, and I want you to be sure to tune in for that. But we'll come back to you then the following week with more up-to-date, exciting current events and politics, and by then the primary elections will be over and we'll have the winners and losers there. Now, I want to remind you that we'll be right back after these messages from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event, from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Jim Nash, small business and homeowner in Pinehurst. Recently, a number of Pinehurst citizens have seen the need to form a new initiative called We the People Declare. Website, wethepeopledeclare.com. We support citizens who value freedom, ethical governance, and community integrity. We will ensure our governance faithfully serves the public's interests, maintains open communication, accountability, and transparency. Get involved. Visit wethepeopledeclare.com and sign up to stay informed.
There's a long black train coming down the line, feeding off the souls that are lost and crying. Rails of sin, only evil remains.
Welcome back to Taking Aim. Our guest is Bob Huber, the Director of Worship at Sandhills Alliance Church of Pinehurst. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. Thank you for coming in. It is going to be a very enlightening conversation this morning. You know, on this program, we spend a lot of time talking about politics and current events and people debating one another and people at odds with one another and in the topsy-turvy world we live in. But it will be a delight, Bob, to have you in today to tell us about Inspirational Tuesdays at the Sand Hills Alliance Church, the origin of it, and what its aims and goals are. So why don't you first start off by telling us a little bit about Inspirational Tuesday, once a month, a very special worship service for a growing group of congregants. Why don't you tell us about it?
Great. I would love to. And thank you so much for having me on this program. So Inspirational Tuesday, our worship services launched back in September of 2025, just last year. And we've had about six of them already. And we do that once a month on Tuesdays at 1 o'clock. We support people with disabilities. That's our number one goal, is to support adults with disabilities and their loved ones. And this worship service is actually just kind of a progression of ministry that we've done with people with disabilities in our community, going all the way back to, I'd say, probably around 2019. We started a prayer service at Monarch in Southern Pines, where a lot of people attend, and it's grown from there. We had several people baptized in 2021, and then it just went on, and these folks decided last year sometime that they really wanted to do some kind of worship service that was geared towards their needs. So that's kind of the short story about it.
Well, I'm not a theologian, but I don't recall ever finding any passages in the Bible that that tell us that there are limits on who qualifies as a child of God. So
that's right.
I believe that you are expanding this service for a very good reason. What do you find is the most important way that worshiping with this group of wonderful people, how does it most impact their lives as they make their journey, their faith journey through this world?
I would say inclusion is a word that makes the most impact on their lives. In other words, in our worship services, we make every effort to include the people that attend as part of the service. In other words, we have one young lady who prays at the beginning. We have several readers. We have people who worship and, you know, sing. We have people who lead worship. We've had several different choirs from different groups of people with disabilities come and lead worship. And then we also include different pastors from the community who are, at their own churches, but they come and teach and lead the ministry of preaching and teaching with our folks. So it's a lot of different kind of inclusion, and is what we're aiming for.
Right. So it's not a traditional service where you stand up and deliver a sermon and everybody sits quietly and hangs on your every word.
No, not usually. What happens is there's a lot of participation. We do have a message that's about 20 minutes long, but we call it a sensory-friendly service, which basically means that if people want to get up and move around, they're free to do that. They can leave the room and go into a quiet room. This past service, we had a preacher who, it was interesting because the congregation was kind of talking back to him, and that was okay because it was just part of what was going on. We have folks who are really interested in learning God's word, and they respond back to the pastor at times, even when he's in the pulpit. So we have some folks who are very vocal, and that's a good thing. We encourage that.
What are the central biblical messages that you feel are most vital to your ministry on Inspirational Tuesdays, which are, I will repeat for those of you just joining us, Inspirational Tuesdays are monthly at the Sand Hills Alliance Church in Pinehurst. And we are joined this morning by Bob Huber. And so the question was, Bob, you know, what are some of the biblical principles that really sort of guide your ministry in this Tuesday format?
Well, one of the things, I'll summarize, actually, we have a information sheet, and I'm just going to summarize. The Great Commission, which is the church's mission statement found in Matthew 28, is to go and make disciples and to be my witnesses in Jerusalem, in all Judea and Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. Now, Samaria, in the time of the Bible, those were people who were disenfranchised. Those were people that kind of were forgotten by society. And we believe that our church has been called to support these folks and to minister to them and make disciples among our Samaria. So that's kind of like a very distinct vision of this ministry. I'll also say that when we receive the teaching, we're going through the letter to the 1 Corinthians. So we're going through it verse by verse, chapter by chapter. So in other words, anything that is taught in 1 Corinthians, we're learning it. So as far as theologically, and it's a great letter for just basic theology, for especially for a young church. So that's why we chose to go through 1 Corinthians.
And then in addition to the Inspirational Tuesdays, are you finding that that this outreach is actually growing your overall congregation? In other words, do some of your Tuesday folks become Sunday folks and so on and so forth?
It depends. We've had a few folks join our Sunday services. We had one young man over Christmas time decide that he wanted to sing with our choir. So he came out and sang on Christmas Eve. So that was really cool. What we are seeing is not necessarily within our Sunday services, but within this service. This is another worship service of our church. So we have kind of like a distinct group of people that come to this service. We have community members, loved ones, parents, caregivers, even another local pastor who I had been talking with about this. She's been coming each time. So it's growth, but it's not necessarily Sunday growth, but sometimes we see some of that.
And tell us a little bit about your story and what drew you into the ministry and into devoting your life to being a pastor and to leading and inspiring people. How did that happen for you?
So for me, specifically for adults with disabilities, I've been working in this field for just over 30 years. I started in January of 1996, fresh out of college, and worked in group homes and kind of have worked in a lot of different roles. And in the beginning, I thought ministry and church were kind of like a separate thing from that. But over the years, I've learned that it's all one mission. And I'm learning that my role as a leader and as a pastor doesn't need to be separated from my workplace and, you know, my family life, my church life. It's all under one umbrella. And these folks, I've worked for Monarch for just about 8 years now in this role. And I've gotten to know all these folks, and these are my family, the folks. And I'm gesturing now. I know it's radio, you can't see it, but there's about 15 people in this room that are from Inspirational Tuesday and from Monarch, which is a center for adults with disabilities in our community.
Yes, you brought a record crowd to our studio today. We've never had an audience before, so thank you for doing that. I really appreciate it. I can feel the love and energy in this room because of that. And, you know, you mentioned Monarch. Tell us a little bit more about the work of Monarch, because I would dare say that many of our listeners may be unaware.
That's right. Yeah. So Monarch is a statewide agency. We're large. We have about 1,800 employees across the state. We support, I want to say, a total of about 30,000 adults with either mental health challenges, that's mental illness, intellectual and developmental disabilities, or substance abuse issues. Now, that's the big picture across the state. Within the day programs, we now have 16 day programs across our state, and the Monarch in Southern Pines is one of the larger ones. We support about 60 adults with intellectual disabilities. So we do creative arts, we do painting, pottery, music, anything you can think of with arts that we do it, or if we don't do it yet, we try to do it if somebody's interested. So that's where the Monarch connection kind of comes into play with Inspirational Tuesday. And it started at the Southern Pines Monarch because they have an Inspirational Tuesday Bible study every other Tuesday of the month at 1 p.m. So it's the same time. We just do the worship service on the third Tuesdays.
And is Monarch a state-funded initiative?
Yes, it is. Yes. So Monarch is not a faith-based agency. However, Monarch supports people's faith development. So if people want to learn the Bible, or learn about God, we offer opportunities to do that. And it's a choice. So our adults, all of them, can choose to attend Bible study, attend the service, or not. So it's their choice as adults. And that's how we, I wouldn't say get around the state issue, but we're using faith development as one of the offerings.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you have pottery class, you have cooking class, you have a Bible study. Mm-hmm. You can choose among those.
I see. That makes sense. And does Monarch rely on community volunteers to?
Yes, they do.
Advances. So how does someone learn more about Monarch? Is there a website they can visit?
Yes, they can go to monarchnc.org. And then there's a, at the top, there's a place you can navigate to each center across the state, and people can volunteer and apply to volunteer that way.
I bring that up because I think, you know, Pinehurst is a world-renowned golf resort destination, but when you live here, as I have for now more than a decade permanently, you realize that it's not unlike other communities in that there is there are many pockets of need.
That's right.
Many opportunities to volunteer, many opportunities to engage in life-changing activities. And we have many citizens here with time on their hands because a lot of them are retired.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I've seen that in some of the other initiatives here in this community, such as Meals on Wheels, the food banks, and it just spend 15 minutes in any one of those places, and you will be uplifted, and you will realize that there is a purpose in life other than getting up in the morning and sending texts and scrolling your phone for social media hits.
That's right.
And that's it can be very, it's just replenishing your for the soul to know that this is going on in our community, and that it's not just about golf tee times.
That's right. That's right. Interestingly, you brought that up. A lot of the people who attend Monarch volunteer at those places that you just talked about. We do a Meals on Wheels run. I believe we still do that. We've done it in the past for Meals on Wheels. We have folks who volunteer at the Coalition, Habitat for Humanity. So a lot of the folks during their time at Monarch, they'll go out and volunteer. So it's a way for them to give back as well. So it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, it really is. We are talking to Bob Huber from the Sand Hills Alliance Church, Director of Worship, and the individual who leads Inspirational Tuesdays every month. They're coming up in March, April, and May on the schedule so far. And what if someone is looking for a church home in this community and hears the sound of our voices right now? What would you tell them to do in terms of contacting you and the Sand Hills Alliance Church?
I can take a phone call, a text message. I don't know. Do I say those here on what I
need? You can certainly do that.
Okay, yeah. Great. Yeah. My phone number is 910-695-6765. And you can email me at bobh828@gmail.com. And I encourage you, if you are interested in coming to Inspirational Tuesday, just show up. It's 1 p.m. Our next service is on March 17th, which is also St. Patty's Day, incidentally.
How about that?
So you can just show up there. If you would rather attend our Sunday service, we meet Sunday mornings, 10 a.m., and we have an adult discipleship class at 8:45, and that's at 111 Trotter Drive, Sand Hills Alliance Church. So you just show up.
Which is right off of Highway 5.
Yes, it is.
As you drive south toward Aberdeen.
We're behind the Exxon station, if you know where that is.
Yes, I do. That's exactly what I was going to say. Well, Bob, it has been a pleasure to have you with us this morning on our program.
Thank you so
much. And I am so glad that a mutual friend of ours suggested that we have this conversation and have you come in. And thank you for bringing all of your wonderful Inspirational Tuesday people who are, you know, an inspiration to all of us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Well, as always, we thank all of you for sharing Saturday mornings with us. For David Hensley, I'm Steve Woodward. We're back next Saturday exposing deception, corruption, and rhino imposters doing what we do best, taking aim.